Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I'm Zach.
And we are here on a brand new week. It's a Monday episode.
It is. Oh, gosh, John, it's so gorgeous outside today. I'm sorry, we have to talk about the weather for a little bit because it has been a stretch of some great fucking weather here in Atlanta.
Motherfucker, I told you fall is here.
It's still a little too hot for fall.
A little bit.
We're still in second summer.
A little bit. Well, hold on. So, starting later this week, we're dipping down in a high of 70s.
Nice.
So, nice. We're there. The leaves, I'm looking out my windows right now. The leaves are beginning to change color a little bit.
They are. We got a lot of evergreens out here, though, so it's kind of hard to tell sometimes.
I have more than just evergreens out here, motherfucker.
I know. I'm just saying, hey, it's a lot of deciduous trees. I think that's the term for them.
Well, why don't you just fucking piss in my cornflakes some more? Goddamn.
It is wonderful weather. John, I had, for the like 15 people who follow me on Blue Sky, they will already know this, but I had a midweek flight this past week, and I was out there at like 7 a.m., getting the plane ready to go. It was a cool, crisp 66 degrees out there.
Light jacket weather?
I was in shorts and a t-shirt because I knew it was going to be up in the 80s by the time I got back.
All right. Well, that's fair.
But it was just so nice. And the cold air makes everything just smooth. It was a little bit of a hazy day. You know, and hazy days mean stable air, which I will talk about later in the week.
Okay. We're going to bring it back.
I'm going to bring this back. But it was so great. And I did, for the first time in my flying career, unassisted landings.
Hey.
I did six of them.
Well, you're here.
Yes.
Which means that you didn't crash.
Yes. We walked away from all of them.
That's good.
Yep. Yep.
When you and I went out to dinner this week, you're like, man, I don't feel so good about my landings still. So, clearly you're feeling a little better about them. So.
Well, I got in the plane and I was like, motherfucker, like I know I'm better than this. I know all the things in my head. It just, I was having this like block of like translating it into motions. And I was, you know, pardon my French. I know this is a Christian podcast, but I was like, I'm going to land this fucking plane.
Zach, I believe what you're feeling is performance anxiety, and don't worry, it's a thing that happens to a lot of men, supposedly. I wouldn't know.
Oh, I know. Yep, landed it. Felt good. Felt great. Me and old flight instructor, name redacted, had a grand old time. I'm at just over the 10, pushing 11 hours mark in the plane right now.
Okay.
I think
you
most,
need what, like 150 before you can get your license or some shit like that?
No, 40.
Oh.
40 is the minimum.
Oh. I thought it was, oh no, 150 I think is like the minimum that you need before you start working towards your commercial, right?
I think 200 is commercial. I think, I don't know. I'm really hazy on that. I've not read into it yet. Baby steps. We'll get there.
All right. Well,
but you know, average for most people doing their solos is like where, you know, your instructor just hops out the plane and goes, all right, we'll take it for a few laps and land her again. Somewhere around like 20, 25 hours.
Cool. Well, you're getting one step closer to being that guy that just drags along the banner over the beach.
I'd do it. Even though I have a moral obligation against those people, I would do that if they paid me to do it. you know, okay, so I can almost live with those because you don't have to look all the way up into the sky when you're at the beach.
Unlike those boats that have the fucking big-ass screens Don't you love being advertised to at all times?
I'm not a beach person.
Oh, no. Mountain person.
Much more of a mountain person. But my family is a beach family. So I am almost always going down to the beach on a family vacation.
Yeah, you're beholden to the wishes of many more people.
Right. I'm the single childless person in my family. So I don't get much of a say.
That's not true.
Single childless person?
Oh, single. Yeah, okay. I thought...
I'm not the only childless person.
Yeah, my brain didn't put the comma between single and childless there.
So I don't get much of a say. when it comes to where the family's vacation.
Yeah, no. You get none.
No. But I remember the first time I saw one of those fucking boats with the billboard just floating down the beach, I was incensed. I was enraged at this because, again, the planes, you could just not look up. And generally, they're not like a big graphic thing. It's just a line
of letters that says, eat at Joe's or whatever. Yeah,
it's basically a ransom note in the sky.
There's a backwards R in there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But no, those like pontoon boats or whatever they are that float down the beach with advertisements, they can all go straight to hell, in my opinion.
I feel like that's justification for going to the beach with like a potato gun and just shooting potatoes at those giant fucking LED billboards and then breaking them so that way they have to fuck off.
I feel like you could probably defend that in Florida if you needed to.
Yeah. I was in fear of my life.
Yeah. It's a stand your ground state. Anyways, it's been a great week. All that to say, it's been a great week of weather. I'm excited for it to continue and to continue getting a little bit colder. You know who's not having some great weather right now?
All of the Sardaukar that are watching this giant ash cloud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is not so great weather for them.
Nope. Not at all. We are talking about minute 135 through 136 of Dune Part 2 by Denis Villeneuve. And as is tradition, we're going to talk about 60 seconds of a movie and make some shitty jokes. And somehow people listen to this.
Now, we're coming off of a week where we had a little bit of a disagreement.
Okay.
And the listeners will know this because you put in some editorials for last week's episodes. And I agree with your editorials.
The week before.
Was it the week before?
Yep.
Okay, sorry.
Actually,
I think it was last week.
No, it was the week before.
Okay. Well, I made sure that we're not going to run into that issue this week because I went through and I did my timestamp method and I went back and did your stupid fucking frame method.
Listen,
it's the Dune minute, John, Dune minute.
The minute starts.
No, if we were going to go by your, I'm sorry to rehash this.
I'm going to cut all this anyway.
No, I'll leave it in.
Well, no, because I cut most of our argument. So
it's not the Doom 24 frames or whatever.
It is the Dune minute, which is 60 seconds of a movie.
Yes.
How many frames are in a second? 24.
No, but you're using an arbitrary. You're not. Okay, it's not arbitrary, but you're using a secondary method of measurement to one that we have already established. The Dune minute.
It is a more accurate.
No, but then we'd have to go back and redo the entire show.
I've been doing this since fucking halfway through part one when we actually...
Is this the cause of all of our arguments?
No. Anyways. Zach, last week we got left off on a cliffhanger, but unlike other... Cliffhangers that we've had before, we're not... cut off mid-sentence.
No.
There's been this giant fucking boulder about, I don't know, 15 feet above the ground that's just been suspended in animation for a week.
Yep.
We started this minute off with this boulder hitting the ground, and my blue balls for this boulder are finally gone.
That's what that sound was.
Yeah.
Yes, the debris continues to rain down from this massive explosion. These were the Atreides family atomics that got used. I believe three of them specifically.
Yep.
Got used to blast a hole in the shield wall, exploiting a tiny loophole in the great convention of...
We love a loophole.
The atomics were not used against humans, so it was okay to use them, even though for sure humans died because of the use of the atomics. I will let the courts figure that out.
I said the bananas were free. I didn't say they were free for everyone.
Exactly. James Acaster, go look him up. Great comedy special.
Repertoire,
yes.
All four parts.
Yeah, that seems like splitting the finest of hairs. But, hey, again, that's for the courts to figure out.
I work with lawyers every day.
They love that
shit. That's all they do is just split hairs.
I know. In a past life, I wrote semi-binding legal documents when I had no right to be doing so.
And detaining people.
Yeah, kind of. If they didn't follow the documents that I put forth and they signed, they would technically be, I guess, eligible for a kidnapping charge. Now, this dust storm that is produced from these atomics is crazy.
It's fucking, like, massive. So, the first shot that we have where we get the release of this giant boulder hitting the ground, it's very high up in the sky looking down at, like, I don't know. I'm bad at fucking estimating angles. I'm going to just assume it's like a 45 or 40 degree angle that we're looking down at the ground towards. And we can see this giant fucking ship in the giant Imperial tent and all this stuff that was super like big and looming that we saw last week. That ain't shit compared to the size of this explosion and like this giant dust cloud.
Yeah. And I think we're going to have the same beef with this minute.
I will say this before we get into beefs.
Okay.
If there's one thing Denis Villeneuve does in all of his movies, it is establishing a sense of scale.
Yes. Yes. But it's not adhered to in this minute.
Okay. Go on.
Okay. So you're absolutely correct. The explosion from these atomics is fucking massive. It dwarfs the Imperial ship and the ziggurat and all of the armies that are surrounding it. And we waxed poetically last week about how big and how large these armies are.
The biggest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone's talking about how big they are.
It's just the bigliest. Yes.
Just and like this, my hands.
And this wave of debris that is rushing towards them, which gets pretty fucking close and like starts to engulf them in this minute, is huge. And at the speed at which it is encroaching upon them is incredibly fast. How does it not just obliterate the ship and the ziggurat and everything underneath it? Because it seems like it just stops at whatever point is convenient for the plot.
That's why. And that's how.
I know. And that's bullshit.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's my beef. That's my beef. Physics kind of stops for plot reasons.
Sure. Okay. So
first, I don't know of a way around it.
So our first 7 seconds definitely shows like that top down aerial view. And then we get a side view, get a little bit of some side ship action again. Where we can see what you thought was the engine.
The ship. Yeah, of the ship. Got it.
And we get a little pyroclastic flow action going on.
Yeah. We saw this earlier. We saw a little bit of it earlier last week.
A little bit.
Yeah.
We see a lot more of it this week. And I spent a not inconsiderable amount of time last night when I was doing my notes looking up videos of pyroclastic flow in volcanoes here in our world. That shit is terrifying. And if you're curious why people die when volcanoes erupt, because it's like, oh, the lava doesn't go that fast. No, but
it does.
This pyroclastic flow of ash and heat and dust and like sulfur and like all these other poisonous gases and everything travels at like 200 kilometers an hour.
Yeah, it's fucking fast.
Yeah, and you'll just see this entire side of the mountain just like turn into dust and ash so quickly. And one thing that I do appreciate is the weird phenomenon of how it appears to just like rise up from the ground instead of being laid down onto it. Because with the side view, like obviously we see the stuff falling from the sky, but you then see like the ground just kind of like getting kicked up and everything. Yeah. And that follows more with the pyroclastic flow side. So, if we're going to take your beef, the rocks being thrown and everything, landing where they land, maybe that's just a matter of, you know, the physics of launching those big-ass heavy rocks.
Sure.
My beef is that the pyroclastic flow stops.
Well, I think, yeah, we're talking about the same thing. Like, just the overall destructive wave that is, like, moving towards this camp.
Yeah.
Just seems to dissipate at a far higher rate.
It only hits one particular side of the circle and doesn't permeate throughout the rest of the basin.
Right.
When, in reality, pyroclastic flow can go as far as... depends on the volcano that it's, you know, coming out from and everything, but from my research, my very limited research last night, it can go as far as like 20 or 30 miles from the volcano. So
my only personal experience with this is that I've hiked Vesuvius and I've been in Pompeii. Mm-hmm. And they are not...
Did you see the cast of the guy that was jerking off as he died?
I don't think he was doing that, but yes, I did see.
No, he definitely looked like he was fucking jerking.
Just trying
off.
To squeeze one more out.
Wouldn't you?
Yeah, it depends on if I'm in the mood. I don't know. My mind might be elsewhere. You know, I may have a headache or something that day.
Did you go to that house full of all the statues of Priapus?
Yeah. Yeah.
Hell yeah, dude.
Yeah, dude, it was awesome.
Dicks everywhere.
It was great. Like really, really cool, experience going there. And I was just like, I wasn't on a tour or anything. I was just kind of solo going through Pompeii, spent the entire day there. It was awesome, but it is a fair distance away from Vesuvius.
Mm-hmm.
And that just, the fact that they were caught so unaware is crazy. I mean, so that just goes to illustrate how quick this stuff can engulf a place.
Yeah. Oh, fucks it up.
So everyone's freaking out. Inside the ziggurat, it just kind of feels like an earthquake that's going, not like even a crazy big one.
Well, hold on. Before we go inside, we do get some ground level views of like all the chaos and everything that's going on. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, the Sardaukar are trying to maintain a sense of like, hold your formation.
Decorum.
Meanwhile, some of them are just like, I'm getting the fuck out of here, dude.
Yeah.
Fuck this. and we see just these absolutely like massive boulders just like slamming into the ground. And one thing that I appreciate is that the camera also shakes with the like impacts.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a thing. That's the thing that bothers me in a lot of movies. It's like when you have these big impactful moments and the camera's just like perfectly still. And I get it, right? Like, you're meant to just be an observer in these situations, but adding a little bit of shake to the camera helps give it a little more immersion.
Yeah, I agree.
I think.
You like the blood splatter on the lens too.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. And just like, I mean, these Sardaukar are just getting smashed and buried and just wrecked by this. And given the chaos that we're seeing in this moment,
not having a good time.
No, not at all. And given the chaos that we see in this the scene, it's a miracle that any of them survive this.
Mm-hmm.
Any of them from the entire camp survive this. But they remember to turn on their plot Holtzman shields. And we'll see later that a lot of them do survive.
Yeah.
So as I was saying a little bit, at this point, that's when we cut inside.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, the inside shaking around. Everyone's kind of freaking out. It's definitely not proportional to what is going on outside.
No, but you can see the, like, interlocking parts of the tent interlinked.
Interlinked.
Kind of vibrating against each other. And that shows what we were talking about last week with how this tent gets placed and then it's just like a boom, 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 kind of like raise it up kind of thing.
Yeah. And spoiler alerts, we'll see a lot more of that later.
We will. Yes. We'll see how fragile it is later.
We hear someone shout, Sardaukar on guard, assuming it's the Bashar.
It is the Bashar.
Bashar. Yeah. Okay.
And we get three of our four words this entire week.
Now, Fade's just looking around. He's kind of like just gearing for action, not really knowing where it's going or where it's going to come from. And he glances over at Raban, who
is shitting bricks.
Yeah, I was going to say looks very panicked, but yes, shitting bricks is also appropriate.
The scientific term is fucking shitting bricks.
But he seizes the moment. He seizes this moment. He carpe diems it and gets runs the fuck away. Out of there.
there is a couple things that you forgot.
Okay.
So the first person to look up at all the rattling of everything that's going on is Princess Irulan. And most notably with Princess Irulan was all of her hairs sticking out from underneath her chainmail hood.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah. This was a... So, like, if we want to talk about nitpicking the most minor of details, why didn't the costume department say, hey, maybe we should give Florence Pugh, like, a fabric skull cap to put on before they put on this giant chainmail?
Well, they want to be able... The hair is a measure of distress. The more hair that sticks out, the more distressed she is.
Yeah, but there's... You just see, like, little bits of it sticking out.
She's just a little confused at this point. She's not fully distressed. You remember the doll from Rugrats, the Angelica doll?
Yeah.
Yeah, by the end of this week, she's going to look like that.
All right. But yeah, that was one of those things that I was like, that feels like that could have been a real easy fix that the costume department probably should have just been like, hey.
Yeah. And we know from the many press appearances that Florence Pugh loves a slick back.
Mm-hmm. As we've seen many times in this movie as well.
Oh, yeah, very true. Yeah. She loves a slick back. She just could have done that.
She's not averse to also wearing fully encapsulating headpieces.
So what's another layer of fabric? Yeah, I didn't notice that. But
Shaddam also has a moment where he like kind of quickly steps up from his chair and is also kind of like looking around.
Yeah.
And that's when the Bashar yells Sarakar on guard and we get the moment between Fade and Rabin. Most notably, Vladimir is still just like belly down on the stairs.
Yeah.
Like kind of wet fishing it.
I did typing out Sardaukar guard was a little bit redundant for me. So I did just start calling them. Well, it was a progression. I went Sard guard and then just Gardasar for a little bit.
Yeah.
And I there's a little bit that'll come back into play a little bit later in this week.
Okay.
When I incorporate a Skarsgård into this.
Of course. I mean, there's already like a billion Skarsgårds. So what's one more? Right. In my notes, instead of typing out Sardaukar every time, I just type in Sard.
Same. Same. The Sard guard.
There's Sard. There's Still. There's Paul. Mm-hmm. There's P.
Yeah.
There's PBJ.
Mm-hmm.
There's Chawl.
Mm-hmm.
Because.
Or Chusel.
Chawl's easier to type. Just
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, how we've come full circle to this, where you've done a complete 180. You gave me shit when we first...
I did give you shit for Chawl, and you know what? It's grown on me pretty quickly, so.
So after Raban puts on his skedaddling legs and gets on out of there...
I'm going to insert the Mr. Krabs leg sound.
Yeah. Just he Scooby-Doo's it out of there. We smash cut to a buried hand slowly making its way out of the dust and sand.
Most notably, though, it's also pretty silent. We just went from the loud rattling of, you know, the inside of this tent and all the explosion sounds to just like that calm before the storm silence. But then we get a little bit of the like Sardaukar voices and everything rising up again pretty quickly on.
Yeah. And again, my beefs continue here.
Okay.
So this hand looks like it reaches up from about 1 inch of dust.
More than that, but.
Okay. So let's call it 1 to 4. My point will still stand.
It's pretty buried.
It is not that buried though.
Okay.
Now I've seen like flash flood mudslides kind of things go through like a parking lot.
Sure. Notably, Arrakis is very dry.
Yes, yes. But the amount of dirt that can be moved at one time with even just a flash flood, which is not it is a powerful force, but is nowhere near the powerful force that we've seen here.
Sure. No, I agree. It should be feet of.
Yes, it should. They should be buried under feet of debris.
And we kind of get that because as he's like continuing to work his way up, we see just all this dust falling out of his helmet.
But it's no more than a foot. It is no more. I would say it's no more than 6 inches.
I completely get it, though.
The sense of scale has failed me here, John.
And I feel like Denise's sense of scale just works in the upper limit, not the more not the more micro limit. Unless it's a hunter seeker that is approaching Paul's eyeball.
Fair enough. The sense of scale has failed me. And I don't.
I'm gonna get over it. This week's a two for you.
No. I'm gonna get over it because this is pretty much just a very episode centric beef.
Okay.
I will not have this beef as we carry out the week.
Okay.
It's just this is trading realism for plot.
I think it is an acceptable beef to, of all the things to be upset about with this movie. The difference between a foot and a couple feet of dust, not that much of a big deal.
I know. This is a fine
note that I'm picking. Is the Dune Minute. And what do we do if not nitpick the littlest fucking things? So I get it.
In my notes, I put how they're not all under 15 feet of dirt. I don't know. So the remains of the Emperor's army slowly rise up from their dusting of dust.
One of the standard bearers like grabs his flag again and he picks it up.
Gets back to it, man. Just gets back right back to it. Some of them are drawing their swords. Mm-hmm. Not all of them. Some of them are kind of dazed and confused.
Aren't we all?
Yeah. And the last shot of this minute is a Sardaukar who's kneeling down, but like in the process of standing back up.
Sure. He's got a hand on his bent knee or on his like upward knee.
Yeah.
He's doing the superhero pose where his other fist is in the ground and he's looking down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is where the minute cuts out.
Solid minute with the most amount of dialogue we'll have this week.
Yeah, that is true. Sardaukar on guard. That is three of our, what you said, five words this minute?
Four.
Okay, great.
Three of our four words that aren't just like yells.
Or in various other languages, which we don't get translations for.
We don't really.
There's two instances.
Okay.
And we'll point them out as we.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this is gonna be maybe our most like comprehensive, action-packed week. Like we've had other action-packed stretches, but nothing where it is like almost wall-to-wall action. Maybe the one or the Harvester Raid week.
I was gonna say the week before we had David on.
Yeah,
is definitely up there. And then we had some action packed weeks in part one with the whole like flying sequence of getting, or when Leto and Paul and Liet Kynes went out to look at the Harvester, and then there's the whole like diving scene to go pick up all of the Harvester workers, but that was also like cut with Paul's first like huge blast of spice and everything.
And I would say this action is much more grandiose than those.
Yeah. We did have a pretty action-packed week of the Paul versus Jameis fight, but I want to say that was maybe 2.5 or 3 minutes total of a week. So it wasn't like a full week of just like nonstop. Go.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think the first Harvester scene in this movie is the only one that gives it like a run for its money in terms of just like the amount of shit that we have to talk about with action and very little word.
That is true. All right, man. Well, because of that, I don't have a lot of book notes.
I was going to say, I'm very interested to see where your book notes lie for this week. Because one thing that we did talk about in my beefs at the end of last week, I know this because I just finished editing those episodes Friday, was that now we are at the point where Alia should be brought into the chambers with Vladimir and guys Hohenheim and
She should have been there a little bit before this.
Motherfucker, you said as the attack was happening. The attack is happening now.
Yeah, okay, so there's a little bit of time dilation. There is it is the Baron gets brought before the the Emperor.
They talk politics and economics.
They have a little bit of talk. Alia gets brought in, attack happens.
Yeah. So I was right.
Well, I mean, she's like brought in as the attacks are happening, but like it is all like within the course of like two or three paragraphs. It's like it all kind of happens at one time.
Sure. She's not there for like the full interrogation and everything.
No. And one of the major book points that I have, and it doesn't really matter where I put this in because she's not a character in this, this stretch of the movie, is, like when shit goes down, which I think we'll talk about on like Wednesday or so this week, in the, like when shit starts to go down in the throne room, they note that there is a small black cloaked figure darting around trying to look for a knife. And the narration says, because Alia is like, because of her Fremen training, or she's trying to find a knife to kill wounded Harkonnens in Sardaukar while people are distracted.
Yeah.
Which would have been such a fun thing to see.
Just see Alia using the weirding way, just like zipping around. Yeah, but the weirding way from the sci-fi miniseries where it's like very Matrix inspired weirding way. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get back tomorrow and we'll continue.
Alia's backward long jumping across the room just fine.
Let's finish or continue this week, not finish this week tomorrow. Yeah. Let's continue this week tomorrow and get back to some iconic scenes tomorrow.
I'm so excited for tomorrow's episode, dude.
Let's get to it.
All right, cool. In the meantime, you can find the Dune Minute online. We are on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you would like to get in touch with us that way. We will see you tomorrow because
that's what we do. We release one every weekday.
Yeah, that's what we do. We'll see you then.
See ya.